Hello and welcome to Presenting, a podcast where we chat about various topics related to role-playing games, typically Paizo products such as Pathfinder and Starfinder, but also others. I'm John Godek, and with me today is Jefferson J. Thacker, also known as Param. Welcome to the podcast.
Hey, happy to be here. I really enjoyed Presenting. It's one of my favorite things that your crew has brought to the network.
Well, that's exciting to hear. When Ryan said, it's like, oh, I'm so glad you're doing this again, because we used to do this. I'm thinking, I didn't know anybody did this, so I thought I was being original.
I mean, we love it. Like, interviews is kind of the passion that kind of, like, yeah. Why No Direction even exists is a lot of reason is to interview mm-hmm. people that make the games we love.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, Param is the director of production, a host, and a cast member of the No Direction podcast network. Param was No Direction's first full-time co-host and has produced thousands of hours of content for the community, including coverage and recordings of the official Paizo panels and hosting their official streams during PaizoCon and GenCon. Param also is the founder of Param Spellbook, a free web application that creates customized spell cards. Now, Param, can you chat a little bit about how you got started on No Direction and how that evolved into your current position as the director of production?
Oh, sure. No Direction kind of splintered off from the old 3-5 Private Sanctuary podcast, which was a podcast that Ryan and his team, his crew put together to sort of keep, some new content for 3-5 going in the wake of, 4th edition coming and a venerable old game system reaching its retirement age. We laugh at that now because of how much longer the 3-5 system continued to live and thrive. But he put together this podcast, No Direction, at the Jeff from the Tome Show suggested that it become its own thing. They were originally just going to do some special episodes talking about it for the Tome Show, but then it became its own thing. And about the same time that he was doing that, I had been looking for my next fantasy role-playing game. I loved D&D 3. I was playing RPGs like crazy. I was planning my first trip to Gen Con ever. I had just gotten my first decent post-college job, so I finally had money to spend on things. Mm-hmm. And I was playing a bunch of games. And at the time, I was playing 4th edition. Like 4th edition D&D, because of course, that's what you do. You play the game, new edition comes out, you play the next version of the game. There's never been anything different that happened up until this point. And I got interested in Pathfinder, not through the game rules itself. I had heard some rumors that, Paizo, who I respected at the time because they were doing the Dungeon & Dragon magazine during what I considered to be the best period of that magazine's existence. And they were going to do their own thing. But more importantly, they were putting out this really interesting system, not system, but campaign setting called Galarian. And I loved Galarian. I picked up the hardcover rulebook for it. And for, I guess, about a year or so, maybe a little bit less, we played in Galarian using D&D 4th edition as the rule set, which is ironic as I'll get, I imagine.
And
Eventually, the beta for Pathfinder had come out. I got super into it. I looked at it and was like, hey, this is pretty cool. These are neat ideas. And 4th edition wasn't quite scratching that itch. I don't hate the game at all. I had a lot of great times with it. I think it does some fantastic things. It brought some really cool ideas to role-playing. But ultimately, it wasn't my forever game. And it wasn't my players. So we loved 3-5. We looked at Pathfinder. We were like, okay, let's just go indie. Which is a giggle here. We'll just go with, because my friend Ricky, he had gone on to Castle and Crusades, and a bunch of my other friends had gone on to their own little tiny indie thing. I'm like, hey, yeah, we'll just play this little indie game called Pathfinder that nobody's ever heard of, and we'll just have fun with that from here on out. I go to Gen Con for the launch of that, shake some hands and all that jazz, and I am pumped. I am in love with Pathfinder now. I started recording some interviews with just one-on-one with the staff, who seemed super happy that anybody was paying attention and wanting to interview them. And And I was just like, you all are awesome that you're all doing this Brave thing and all sorts of fun stuff. That's when we found out that the famous table of core rule books that we thought was just a table and it sold out, and various other things. So ultimately, I get a couple of gigs in the industry while I'm there. I start working for Fat Dragon Games, doing some of their software. I get jazzed up right after Gen Con and make Perim Spellbook. And I have a bit of a complex background in the industry because up until this point, before I got my quote-unquote good post-college job, I spent several years running a comic book store, which my favorite job to this point is still running that comic book store. You just don't make a lot of money running a comic book store.
Not anymore. No, for sure.
No. So Ryan comes, I've started making a splash in the community. Perim Spellbook is a humongous success. I get like a million hits on that website within the first week of it launching. And I didn't even intend to launch it. It kind of leaked out. It's like, I just shared it with a few community members in the old DM tools chat, which was just like 20, 30 people. It got out there, and then I come back and my internet host is like unhappy and is like, what happened? I'm like, I don't know. This was only ever supposed to be for me. I never intended anybody else to use this website. And it then became like one of the top websites for Pathfinder on the internet. And Pathfinder, of course, exploded huge. Ryan's interviewed me a couple of times. We sort of had we had some chemistry there. I had a big wealth of knowledge on Galarian. I had a lot of technical expertise. And he was so far doing the show alone. And I was like, you really need a co-host. I was not offering myself for the job. I was just like, at the time, I was really into podcasting. And this is like real early in podcasting. Like, this is like wave two of podcast. We still did not know how to do it right yet. I dread anybody that takes a close look at the code that makes no direction happen on the web. It's not nice. It's not good. This is not how you should do a podcast, but we didn't know any better. Nobody knew any better. And so he offered the gig to me. And so we became co-hosts. I started like really helping with grow the network. I brought a lot of ideas to things. We worked really well together. We still work really well together. And we started really focusing on convention coverage and interviews and trying to boost the popularity of the game that we thought, this game is wonderful. This setting is great. The adventures are fantastic. More people need to know about this stuff. And we came up with the idea that we were going to treat Paizo crew as if they were rock stars. Like, the people who make the game are the celebrities and should be treated as such. These are brilliant creators. Everybody from the author of the game rules to the adventures to the artists to the editors that get it together, they are doing something that nobody else at the time had been doing. They were producing a really high quality product with a lot of talented staff that at the time WotC was laying people off, and then Paizo was hiring every single person they laid off. And honestly, like about that time, the production quality of all games start to go up, and you can thank Pathfinder for that. They were the first to really stress that, no, your game can't just be black and white with a single, stamp image every few pages. It really does pay off to use graphic design and art and good writing all together to make an impressive product, even if you are quote unquote indie. And now it shot up through and became the most popular game in the world for a little while. And we kind of rode that success right alongside them.
Yeah, no, it's kind of interesting. You know, when did it make that shift from being an indie game to being a mainstream RPG, do you think?
It happened before anybody realized it happened. The Paizo crew, like, there's a number of sales they were hoping for that they told me in confidence that I still will not reveal, but they were like, you know, it'd be real great if we sold X number of thousands of copies. They sold way more than that on the first 6 months alone. And it was really just, hey, maybe this Pathfinder game will be enough to keep the lights on and we can keep making these cool adventures. What the success it reached was, nobody predicted it. Now, they handled it well. they had much more success than they anticipated, but not more than they deserved. And I think everybody in gaming benefited from it.
So can you talk a little bit about what you do as the director of production?
Oh, boy. That is, okay, so me and Ryan basically are the heads of the network, and we have director titles. As when we started saying, hey, the network's starting to grow, we need a title. And we're like, what fits us best? Director. And then director of what? And ultimately, I kind of handle the tech side of the network and also do research as to best practices, as well as like, how do you do a podcast? How do you record a live stream and that sort of stuff? And so director of production was the title we ultimately came up with that seemed to be the best, because I do serve as a executive producer role here on the network. I decide the tech we're using, how we format shows, how we actually do the recordings, like the processes that are involved there. I do a lot of research constantly to see if there is a better way, is there better software, is there better equipment, what can we do. I used to do all of it, but now I'm just the one that oversees all the art choices for the network. And me and Ryan work together very closely to make, I guess, the final decision on most of the big choices of the network, like whether a show gets approved or not.
So does this mean I've been doing something wrong, because I've been choosing all my own tech and software and everything for all my recording?
You get to do that because we trust you, and that's one of the things I depend on, is the people on the network, I trust them. I need to know their expertise and stuff. Also, you kind of are a special case because you came in with your own tech and setup, because, you know, you joined the network as a podcast. Most people come in as individuals, and you had your own thing. But at the same time, I trust you to do this right. So I'm not going to get in your way. I'm not going to get in Ryan's way on how to manage his half of the network. I'm not going to get in V's way on how she chooses to record. I facilitate as needed, and I go over what's chosen, and just, I like to be at least aware of things. But again, with you, it's working. I'm not going to try and fix what ain't broke.
Good.
I'm just mainly here to help people get established. Like right now, I've helped train several of our staff on how to do podcasting, I've taught people how to use all the different equipment we've sent out to people.
Well, I'm interested in learning how to use OBS. I think that's kind of one of my goals for the summer, because I have a big chunk of time off. I'm an academic.
Yes,
so,
yes, you know, we need more OBS producers. So, join us. Yes. Join us, John.
Well, that's a plan, because one of the things that we've kicked around a little bit with our actual play is potentially turning that into a Twitch stream.
Yeah, so, that would be great. Fantastic. That. You'll need to move the day.
If we do, yes.
Yeah. Yes. Just saying, because yeah, we're using the Twitch channel at that time.
Right. Yeah, Wednesdays. Yeah. Yeah.
No, yeah, that's... and that's one of the things that I think really is to No Direction success, is that we're stubborn. Yeah. Not that we're not wanting to learn things, but we just don't quit. When we first came onto the scene, there was a few podcasts just popping up for Pathfinder all the time, especially when it exploded. But we just sort of stuck around and refused to give up and just kept producing content. And we produce content like every Wednesday we record a something. And it went on like that for years and years and years, when all of our competition died away, until we were the only ones left for a very long time. It wasn't until Glass Cannon rose up that we really had competition on the podcasting side. And it's not that we don't like competition. We don't want other shows. We desperately want some people to be producing content for this game. It's we love working with others, like we do with Roll for Combat. And lately we've been doing with D8 and Black Dragon Gaming and such. We were the only ones for a while, and we were wondering if anybody else was going to join us.
Well, I've seen a lot of podcasts and streaming starting to pop up with players, and like every week I see new ads on Facebook for people doing things. It's like, wow, this is kind of cool, you know?
Yeah. I think it's the success of the actual plays. Like, I've been before Adventurous, No Direction kind of swore off doing actual plays because we've seen them done wrong so many times. And then Matt Mercer with Critical Role and Glass Cannon came up and showed people how to do it right. And I think that was the only time we even started considering it. And now there's all these great actual plays being done. The Dragons and Things crew, the Queers as Three-Sided Dice crew. There's so many people doing some fantastic work out there. And I'm so happy to see it. There's not a lot of people doing what No Direction does, though. We still are the news, reviews, interviews crew, though we do have some fantastic podcasts like your Intrepid Heroes, Adventurous, and the rest of the... We have so many. I can't keep track honestly anymore of all the shows. The network's grown so much. It's kind of intimidating trying to manage it all.
Yeah, I can imagine. You know, like when Ryan has to put together like the scheduling and stuff and just keeping track of all the blogs. That's one thing. Like, I see all these different topics and different things and overlapping, and it's like, wow, that's a lot. That's a lot going on. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, right. That is Ryan's strength, and that is his. He handles all the business processes and the scheduling, and making sure people are connected together, and arranging a lot of our interviews. I try to help with that last part sometimes, but he definitely does the lion's share of all that. And Ryan is just a beast at it. He's so good at it, and I'm so happy that he is willing to step up and take that role, because I am absolutely abysmal when it comes to being organized.
So how did you gain all your expertise in doing the technical side of things?
A lot of self-study and experimentation and getting things wrong a lot. Like, we learned to do this back before people knew how to do it right. So we were finding out and experimenting and just trying new things. I would listen to other podcasts and see what they were doing. I was constantly studying. I've got a background in computer science as my primary college degree. And then I went on to web publishing. And then I've gone into like multimedia design and video producing and audio producing and just sort of chasing whatever new, neat, shiny, because my philosophy on life is basically, if you're not learning how to do new, cool things, then what are you even doing? And I just channel that need to know, to learn, to do more and make more awesome things. And then inevitably, all these different skill sets I've learned combine and make fantastic content sometimes. Well, I think it makes pretty good content, so some people seem to like it.
Now, when I was looking around trying to figure out with my podcast if I wanted to continue to go alone or join another group, I looked at a couple other broader RPG community things, but No Direction in terms of Paizo products was the place to be. There was no other choice. That's why I sought you guys out. You know, that's it. You were the only ones. So.
Well, we're glad you came around. Like, your crew has been fantastic to have aboard, and I love working with them and working with you especially. The amount of content that exploded on the network, there's like a couple of times that network kind of had these big explosions. It was right after the peak of Paizo success, and we brought on a bunch of crew to write when the blogs really exploded, and we started doing a couple of different shows. And then when we brought you and your crew on, and we also launched a bunch of other shows just so that we wouldn't appear so Starfinder heavy at the time. Mm-hmm. And then that was the second big time the network kind of grew up and in a hurry.
Cool. Right. I'm glad to have been a part of that.
You've been a fantastic part of that.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Well, so you have been a very active GM, player, adventure officer. How do you manage to balance all these things with your work on the No Direction Network, and you also have a full-time job?
Oh, yeah. I have to do that, don't I? I don't really, like, I guess the answer is I don't manage it well. I hate to say it. Like, that's when there's friction on the network, me related, it's because I've got too many plates spinning in the air and need to find a way to get some help. I just love doing things and love making things and working with people. And I can't hardly say no to a project. and I can't hardly do a project badly. And I love playing Pathfinder. It's the reason why the networking, we do this. Me and Ryan love this game so much. So I have to play the game. I have to play the game as much as I can. And the best way to play it is to be an adventure officer, run several groups, and then do all these different shows, and go to all these cons. And I basically, that's what I do. I wake up, I take care of the day job stuff. I then take care of the no direction stuff. Then I go to sleep. And occasionally I fit in a few games.
Yeah. You know, I saw some players that were really excited when you were offering to run games for folks and you're GMing things. Do you get a lot of players when they find out that they're in one of your games at a convention that they kind of get awestruck by that?
It happens a few times. I always get embarrassed and I always worry I'm not going to live up to the reputation.
Yes. Yes.
I'm just a fan who loves playing games, and when I the first time somebody asked me for my autograph, I kind of maybe stumbled over myself a few times.
Yeah.
And I still just really want to make sure everybody is enjoying themselves and has the best time they're able to. That's my philosophy as a GM too. It's like I measure the success as a GM as to whether or not my players had an awesome time, not in body count or progression or how much of the story, or whether or not they went off the rails. Just as long as they're cheering at the end, I don't care if I broke every rule in the book, as long as they were having fun.
So here's a very important question. Where does the name Parham come from?
Oh, boy. Parham. All right. So, long story on that one. When I wanted to come onto the network, we already had the co-host for 3-5 Private Sanctuary was named Jay, and there was already a Jeff involved in production. And so Jeff or Jay was not really an option. And Ryan just started calling me Parham and because of Parham's spellbook. Mm-hmm. And I was using that as a name on the forums. Mostly that was because like I had an EverQuest character named Parham and that I later based a Pathfinder character on. It was never meant to be a name or anything I went with more like at all. This was never meant to be my pseudonym, but it just sort of stuck and I was never able to get rid of it. And now I just quit fighting it. Nobody even calls me Jefferson in the industry, except Eric Mona, who always calls me Jefferson.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah. Cause like for me, like, I know what your name is, but I always, again, I just think Parham. Like, we refer to you as Parham. We don't, you know, and I think you're the only person on the network that we use a pseudonym for. Is that right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And no, everybody else uses there's a couple of people with tagline names, like Alex, who's got the Everyman Gamer going for him. And, most everybody else just uses names. And like I said, this wasn't intentional. It's just something that happened. And I know enough about marketing and branding to know that when something happens organically to just go with it and don't fight it, one of the other backgrounds I have is like a decade in marketing to go along with my decade in web services. So
you must be old. Sort of
leverage that. Not
you must be really old, man.
I'm 37. I guess that's old. Is that old now? I guess that's old.
No, I'm like way older than you, so it doesn't.
I just do lots of things at once. Yes. And that's how I'm speed running life skills is what's happening here.
Well, speaking of doing lots of things, I noticed from your Facebook postings that you're also a very prolific miniature printer and painter. And that is something that I'm amazed at. Some of your 3D prints are just so awesome. How do you do that?
Oh, that's the new hobby. That's the new hobby. Because I can't stop gaining hobbies. So I've always loved miniatures and miniatures painting. One of the first things I did that got me so interested in role playing was like some of the hobby side of things. Since the very beginning, when I didn't just make maps, I made like little dioramas to play on, and it wasn't enough to to draw stuff out on a grid. I had to build a copy of the village out of poster board and towels and all that jazz. So I've always been interested in that side of things. But painting the minis, I was always more practical about it. I used to have a rule. I always speed painted, and I would come up with, like, I would just study all the fastest, best ways to get a mini to look okay in a hurry, because if I needed, the mini exists to play the game, and it needs to look good, but not fantastic. I'm not a competition painter. And so I used to only paint. I used to say, I won't spend more than 10 minutes on any given mini. Each miniature gets 10 minutes to get painted, and then it gets on the table. About a year ago, almost exactly a year ago, a little over, I noticed that 3D printers, which I've always been interested in 3D printing and wanting to do, the resin 3D printers were starting to become something that was accessible to hobbyists. A few hundred dollars, get a resin printer, and you can start printing minis that look freaking great. And so I jumped in that in a hurry. And that's when COVID hit. So I had a lot of free time on my hands. And so the network's doing great. The day job's doing great. But I'm sitting here in the snow in my little studio / game room that I built pretty much all day, every day. And I have a machine that makes toys as much as like a magic machine that makes infinite toys is what I call it. And so I learned to 3D print, which is actually not that hard. If you just want to get a printer and print minis to have them and paint them, it's super easy, honestly. The modern machines are pretty idiot-proof when it comes to using them with a little bit of study. There are things you need to learn or you will break your massive, expensive machine. The resin is toxic. You need to be a little bit safe. But if you can handle power tools, you can handle this responsibly. This isn't rocket science. This isn't nuclear physics. This is just follow the instructions and know what you're doing and don't skimp on the safety aspects and you will have cool looking minis. And at the same time, I was like, you know, I kind of want my minis to look better. I'm going to learn to paint for realsies. And so I started upping my painting game at the same time I was going to printing all these minis. And I sure had a lot of minis I could paint all of a sudden. A bottle of resin costs $40 and it produces over 100 miniatures.
Wow.
I've gotten really, really good at printing now on my small printer, which I've gotten rid of since then and upgraded to a much bigger Elegoo Saturn, which is a mid-sized printer that can print all sorts of lovelies. But I was I was fitting 12 minis on a plate, which means that I now have hundreds of minis sitting here in the game room to paint, and storing them is becoming an issue.
I've seen some big ones too.
Not even the new printer, the old printer. I used to print some big ones, but you print it in parts. Like you print the left wing, then you print but the new printer, I can print them all at once, which is super useful. And I've painted since I got the printer a little over a year ago. I've painted well over 300 miniatures since then. Wow. And just taking classes online, going to ReaperCon and stuff. I love it. It's a fantastic expansion of the hobby. I think this is going to make the hobby much more accessible because these are so cheap. Mm-hmm. I make my own paints for the most part too. So like then having access to the paints is not something that is itself difficult or overly expensive. I think that I like how it's almost like Pathfinder coming out again, where a new industry is breaking out that doesn't pay attention to the rules of the old world and is making its own scene. So making our own paints, making our own washes, making our own minis, everything. And I'm not just content with printing other people's minis anymore. I've started to sculpt my own and make my own art and miniatures and cool things to paint by studying how to make 3D art.
Wow. That you need to do like a whole big, like, teaching series on this, because people are going to want to know how to do it.
Well, there are some people that already do a really good job at that. So I'm a little intimidated jumping into that sphere. Uncle Jesse is good channel to watch for that, for shoresies. Though I guess there's not, I mean, maybe I'll do it, but that's another project on the gigantic list of projects I want to do.
All right. Well, what advice do you have for people who are interested in getting into streaming or podcasting now?
Okay, so getting into streaming has never been easier. There's so much resources and software and cool tech and toys you can buy. And heck, at Walmart, there's a streaming kit right now that you can buy for like $40 that I would have killed for 10 years ago. Like these soft round lights and portable microphones and headphones and like everything in the kit. Like, if you want to get started, it has never been easier, but it's not the tech you need to really worry about before you get into it. You have to have passion. You have to have enthusiasm and energy about whatever it is you're going to do. And you need to realize that however much work you think it is going to be, it's going to be like 10 times as much work. And as long as you're willing to do that, you can be successful. And I really want people to get in there and give it their all. But you have to have energy. You have to be willing to put up with a long time of investment of effort without success, and you may break out early and it will be awesome. And you've been one of the lucky ones, and enjoy that ride, and all kudos to your success. But most of the people, they don't have a breakout early success. Even if you see it and think it, they've had a whole lot of tries and a whole lot of hours trying it and learning and doing. And then eventually through hard work and sweat, they have a breakout success, and it's nowhere near luck or just whimsy. It is hard work and perseverance and a love for what they're doing.
Yeah. I think you have to be really passionate about some area of content and about the process of talking about it. Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, because there is a lot to learn to do it, even though it's a lot easier than it used to be. So
if you were the kind of person who could do speech class, and that's kind of the thing that is the skill you really need. You need to be able to do the public speaking, to not freeze up in front of the camera. Never, passivity is the enemy of entertaining content. You have to be at it. You have to have some enthusiasm or energy. I mean, whether it's love or hate or rage or laughter or comedy, anything but neutral. Nobody wants neutral. There's people that have quote unquote chill streams. They're not actually chill. They're still being entertaining. They're still being charismatic. They're still putting content out there. Silence and hesitation is your enemy.
Well, that's something I better take to heart then.
Okay. Also, learn to edit audio. And if I can give any podcast, there is a magic tech solution to make even the best podcast 100 times better. Learn in your software how to scan for silences and reduce them to half a second. Not delete them. You don't want to delete your silence entirely. It will sound unnatural. But learn how to use your software, scan for silences, and reduce them to a half second silence, and your product, if it was run through that magic, even if it's the worst ever, will still sound better than most.
No, I agree. And honestly, I do that manually. I should figure out how to do it by automatically with the software.
Yes. Hit me up later. I will show you. When I learned how to have the software do this for me, it took my average editing time in half for podcast edits.
Well, I just need to look it up. It's like anything else. When I realize I have a really bad problem, I go look at how to do it. And so, like, that's one. It's like, typically I don't have it a lot, and I can see it visually when those gaps are. And it's really quick for me to just go down. I can stay ahead of the audio and just edit it even before it gets to it. So it hasn't bothered me. But I also don't do as long a podcast as you guys usually do.
I know. It used to be a struggle. Ryan kept trying to get the podcast shorter and shorter. And I was like, no. I want it longer and longer. And I was a big fan of Giant Bomb and This Week in Tech and those sorts of podcasts, which were like 2-, 3-, 4-hour podcasts. Mm. And Ryan's loves like half hour podcasts. And so we eventually settled on a compromise of me getting my way.
Yes. Yeah, I'm more of a fan of the 30 minutes to hour 15. That's kind of what I shoot for. So, well, tell me, Param, what's next for you and the No Direction Network?
I wish I could tell you. I've got 1,000 projects I want to do, honestly, and I never know which one of them is going to be the one that actually gets to succeed and gets to be my next time sink. But I couldn't have told you this year would have gone like, I'm not COVID, like obviously not COVID, but every year of the podcast has just been a surprise of how it's grown and changed and evolved, and all in good ways. I mean, we've had a fantastic ride and I could never have predicted any one of them. And so I'm just going to keep doing it. I'm going to keep pushing and learning and taking advantage of the opportunities that come up, and hopefully you'll like next year as much as you've liked this year.
Well, thanks so much for joining us on the podcast today.
It was a pleasure.